It is 11:03 and we've had trouble getting hold of our guests on time this morning, but I don't think we'll ever have a problem with this bloke because they called him when he was playing the postman. That's because he always delivers and delivers on time, and that's Gavin Larson we're talking about now. Of course, New Zealand cricket a manager in terms of selection. He's been a busy boy this morning talking to the media around the country about the two squads he has named for Ireland, Scotland and Netherlands matches coming up post this test match against England at Headingley this weekend. Gav, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, hi, Smithy. Pleasure to be with you, mate.
Listen, first of all, I've had a number of texts that have come in and, under the Michael Rippon selection and said, how is he eligible? Can you explain that to us in terms of the international cricket regulations for eligibility?
Yeah, sure. Look, very pleased to be in a position where we could select Michael for, as a starter. He's had a really good 3 or 4 years with Otago, and we've been following his progress with very closely, and then he's performed very, very well. So he's deserving of that spot. In terms of eligibility, so people will be aware that he's played for the Netherlands now for a long time. I think he might have debuted back in 13, 14. So he's played a lot of cricket for the Netherlands. They're an associate member. Full members, like New Zealand, if Michael was on our radar, which he was, of course, if we wanted to select him, there is no formal stand-down period. Going the other way, if a full member player had a desire to play for an associate, there's a 3-year stand-down. So that's the basic sort of criteria. Then I guess the second part of it, Smithy, is what has Michael had to work through here in New Zealand playing domestic cricket before he was deemed eligible by New Zealand Cricket and the ICC. So the simple criteria there is that players need to reside in the country for approximately 10 months a year for the preceding 3 years prior to selection, and show as much proof as possible that they are 100% committed to that country.
Right, that's cleared that one up very clear. Of course, we've had players come this way, the likes of Neil Wagner and co, Devin Conway, for instance, who have had to sit out that eligibility clause in terms of residence. So I think we've seen that side of it before. Okay, when we look at the side, sometimes we look at who was available and not available. And also a couple of texts have come in to say, why aren't our big boys available for these two particular series? I'm talking here about Kane Williamson, Trent Bolt, Tim Southee, Devin Conway. And the reason for that is they have just got some player welfare time off. Is that correct?
Yeah, in a nutshell, Smithy, that's exactly right. Look, mate, we've had a really intense period of cricket, and we've got a massive sort of 12 to 18 months in front of us as well. And again, I guess it's stating the obvious with what we've been through with the pandemic over the last 2 years and living in bubbles, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's become more and more important from our side to make sure that we are managing the players in an appropriate way and managing not just their workloads, but their sort of, the mental side of the game. And we do firmly believe that, giving them these breaks at appropriate times is 100% the right way to go. And that extends through to the coaching staff and the general management around the Black Caps as well. And I think it's a very, very good move. We've got some good depth, Smithy, at the moment as well. So from a selection standpoint, it's giving us that opportunity to have a closer look at some of the fringe players to keep building that depth. And as you know, we've got a T20 World Cup that's not far away, October, November over in Australia, and then a year further on, we're into an ODI World Cup in India. So again, it's all really good opportunities for us to test that depth.
Right, let's look at some of the features of, first of all, the squad for Ireland. Nice to see Michael Bracewell continue his development in his all-round capacity. Lockie Ferguson back into the fray. You've got the experience, of course, of the likes of Martin Guptill and the developing experience, I guess you've got to say, of a player like a Glenn Phillips. These games, I would imagine, you would expect to play well, and you should be expecting you to win them. I'm not saying there might not be a hiccup, but Gav, The guts of this is forming that squad for Australia, isn't it? And here's a chance for players with opportunities running out.
Yeah, you're right, Smithy. There's, you know, time is becoming short, and you know, we have you know, a pretty good feel for how we want to shape that T20 World Cup squad of 15 from a balanced point of view. And there are, you know, there are probably two or three, maybe four spots that we feel we still want to have a, you know, a closer look at. And these are going to be the final opportunities. These T20s against Ireland, Scotland, and the Netherlands. And in terms of the T20 game, and again, just starting sort of more bigger picture, having a look at the ODIs and emerging players, and you know, it's guys like the Finn Allens and the Michael, the Ben Sears and the Rippons that we've talked about, and watching, you alluded to Michael Bracewell, watching his progress, and just to see if they can put up those performances that sort of, I guess, end up forcing our hand as selectors.
Tell us a wee bit about Dane Cleaver. He's been a fairly good servant for a long period of time now for the Stags. He's had a couple of really cool seasons, which enable his name to go a little bit higher up the list. And he's been in a sort of a competitive race with, of course, Cam Fletcher, who's had injury problems. So a door open for Dane Cleaver.
Yeah, yes, it has. And you know, really, really pleased for him too. As you said, he's had some very, very good seasons of performance with CD. He bats in the top of the order, so he's opened and he has come in at three and done a really explosive job, particularly in T20s. You mentioned Fletcher, and similarly, he's very much on our radar too. He plays a slightly different role for Canterbury, where he's a finisher batting around number six. The way we're setting the team up at the moment, we were keen to give Dane an opportunity, and he would take his place in the top of the order. And keeping wise, really solid. So look, and I guess this would be reassuring for you, Smithy, being an ex-wicketkeeper, is the stocks are good at the moment, and these players like Dane and Cameron Fletcher are coming through nicely. And when you think about Tommy Blundell, what he's doing in the Test game, Tommy Latham being our incumbent ODI keeper, and you think about Tim Seifert, who's probably the unlucky one in terms of this white ball selection, missing out. You know, there are some there's some good depth having developed in that wicket-keeping space.
Gav, let's look at where we're going for this T20 World Cup. It is Australia, and at some of the major grounds around Australia. Surfaces, well, I think by and large you can guarantee are going to be pretty damn good. They always are. What kind of bowling attack do you think we'll need? What are the areas that you're going to really look to focus on there?
Oh, look, when I look down our sort of bowling list at the moment, Smithy, and I see names like Ferguson and Milne, and I see Sodhi, I see attacking bowlers. We're giving someone like Rippon a chance to push his case, you know, an attacking bowler. I think you're only going to win a T20 World Cup. And look, everyone knows this, if you're playing in an attacking form of the game. So you need to take wickets. You need to take wickets up front in the power play, and you need to keep bringing bowlers back through the innings and taking wickets. So those explosive bowlers, I think, are going to be absolutely crucial, and getting the balance right and the all-rounders are going to be an absolute key too. So that's the guys like the Neeshams and the Mitchells and how they fit into the mix.
Yeah, it's interesting, Gavin, you know, and you're as a bowler yourself, must be heartened by the fact you can take Bolt, you can take Southee and Jameson out of a mix. None of those players will be in either of these two squads, but I still look down it and I see some genuine pace with Ferguson and Milne in particular, and looking like they're going to be, and I say this with a hand on a piece of wood, their bodies are going to be sound and have been for quite some time. So in that department, pretty well served, aren't we? And then you're throwing Blair Tickner, who you've added to the Test squad as well, and Ben Sears. It's amazing, the depth there.
It's good depth, Smithy, but you need depth, as you know, because it's a hard job trying to bowl at 140 clicks, and you know, it's hard on the body, and we do pick up niggles with those quick guys. So having that depth is crucial. We've also got a group, I think, in Tim and Trent, and in particular, who have proved to be very, very resilient over the years. And I'm now touching wood as I as I say that. And Matt Henry I'd put into that category as well. And so we've had some stability, I guess, around being at the potential to use those guys on a consistent basis. But look, yes, you're right. The depth is there. It does create challenges because we didn't mention Wagner in that group either. And that's been one of the challenges, Smithy, as you know, is how the decision making's been worked through over in England. Arriving at who gets the gig in these test matches, because Wags missing out has been a terribly difficult decision to make.
Okay, well, I'll come to the how we've gone over there in a second or two if I can, Gav. I just want one or two last questions about the white ball side of things. Where does Ish Sodhi sit then if you're looking at Rippon genuinely as a leg spinner?
Oh, look, Ish is tried, proven. He's now vastly experienced. And, we believe, Smithy, he's getting, better and better with age, as we know often leg spinners, wrist spinners do. So Ish is still our 100% go-to wrist spinner, attacking wrist spinner. But it's also marvellous to be talking about a Michael Rippon and bringing him into the fold. And look, he'll work really closely with Ish as part of that squad, and they'll feed off each other, I'm sure. But really, really good to have someone like Rips now, just making sure that Ish is aware that he's hopefully got someone snapping at his heels.
Okay, and just finally, the all-rounder role, which has been a Neesham, we saw Neesham, of course, instrumental in the last World Cup in England in 50-over cricket. You've got him floating around the scene as well. Where does Colin de Grondholm fit there, the Daryl Mitchell-type player we're looking at there? How do you break those down?
The three of them are different type all-rounders. Neesham is, again, similar to sort of what I said about Ish. For us, he's all things being equal, would be a stand-up starter in an all-rounder's role in the T20 game. He's explosive, and he's got the ability to, he's a bit of an X-factor bowler. He can pick up wickets when you sort of almost least expect it from Neesham. So, look, he's a quality player, and I'd certainly like to think that he'll continue to be in the frame, particularly around T20 cricket. I'd also stress that does not rule him out of any ODI planning either, that he's still very much a central part of the planning around all the use of the all-rounders. Colin de Grondholm is more, we see him in white ball cricket as a batsman who will offer you a few bowlers, a few overs, Smithy. Who was the other one? Oh, Daryl Mitchell is again a batting all rounder who could offer you possibly in T20 cricket a couple of overs at the death.
Right. Okay. Let's look at England, Gav. First of all, establish in terms of selection and things that happen over there, just for the people at home. In the old days, home-based selectors. Home-based selectors used to basically just do that. They would, if they weren't on tour, they would have very little say as such. They might have a say in replacement players as such, but is that still the way it is? Do they have a tour selection panel as such, or do you get heavily involved now with our communication systems in terms of, say, this weekend at Headingley?
I wouldn't say heavily involved, but I'm certainly touching base with Gary on a regular basis because, we've got a lot of forward planning we're doing, Smithy, like what we're talking about today. So he's trying to shape the white ball team on an ongoing basis, thinking about the Windies, which is approaching on the radar as well, then on to the T20 World Cup. And look, we're already talking about bigger picture planning around the ODI World Cup in a year and a half's time. And we've got a home season that we need to worry about. So there's a lot of communication that goes on. I'm not privy to a lot of the things that are happening inside the camp over in England at the moment. Gary keeps me abreast of things, and yes, he certainly asks for my opinion, from the other side of the world as to how I might think the balance of the team might pan out. But at the end of the day, Gary holds the reins. He works very closely with Kane as the captain, and they'll pull other senior guys into conversations. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's coach and captain who will make that final 11 decision.
Well, we're down 2-0. We've lost the series, Gav, which I imagine you find deeply disappointing. But if we look and break down the performances as such, it's just been two last day efforts where we, or last innings efforts where we just haven't been able to nail it. I guess, and I talk about Lords where we had them five down, and then in the last one at Trent Bridge we had them four down in pretty good shape, and they've just batted themselves unbelievably well out of it. Is that basically how you see it, or did we get it wrong in a couple of areas?
Oh, yeah, I got a variety of sort of thoughts, Smithy. Probably big picture, I 100% agree with how you've summarised it. It has boiled down to some key moments, and it sounds a bit cliched, but that's very factual in the game of cricket. If you don't seize the key moments, then you know you could be on the wrong end of the result, and I think that's exactly what's happened. I mean, England have played with, I believe, possibly just a little more energy, and I'm probably not surprised with you know the appointment of Baz and Stokes as the new captain. They've absolutely burst out of the gates, and we were expecting it, and we were primed up for that. But I sort of give them full credit for the way they have played. Been a bit disappointed with our, you know, with two or three of our batsmen. You know, we've got some starts, but we haven't kicked on. And you know, when I look at a Mitchell and a Blundell and what they have produced in those two tests, then, you know, that's been right out of the top drawer. And if we had had just one other batsman who'd, you know, kicked on from starts and put the big one on the board, it may well have been different. And the only other point I guess I'd make, Smithy, and I'm look, sort of not in the business of making excuses, but, you know, we went in with the four quicks in that last test. We lost Cole Jamieson, to injury, you know, and that removed, you know, sort of, you know, 25% of your specialist, you know, bowling horsepower, and that's tough. That made it very tough on the other three quicks, who were being backed up by a rookie on, you know, in his, you know, debut, and Michael Bracewell, and that was tough on him. But look, that's not an excuse. We should have done better. And you're dead right. I am really disappointed. Being 2-0 down in the three match series.
One of the interesting talking points, and we don't often talk about it, but I've noticed the trend in it in the last few months, is our spin bowling position within the group. And we've tried two really already in this series as possibility. I suppose they could try a third one this time around when they name the side for Headingley, depending on conditions. But a lot of people, and I must admit, I find it hard to explain to people at times, Gav, how a guy can take 10 wickets in an innings and really not be a factor ever since. And I know it's a conditional thing when we play at home, et cetera, but it's also a very concerning thing, isn't it, to be fair, that we can't find room for that kind of spin bowling brilliance often enough.
Mm-hmm. 100% agree, Smithy. I think the first point for me would be you mentioned the conditions, and, you know, we can't underestimate, you know, how different cricket conditions can be, you know, playing at home here. And I'm not saying all of our grounds, you know, Mount Maunganui we saw, you know, has started to, you know, take spin. But when you think about the Basin and Hagley as examples, you know, it's very, very hard for spinners to sort of, you know, get any sort of degree of volume under their belt in those games. You play in the subcontinent, and, you know, the way we set teams up over there is just totally different. You know, you'll have three frontline spinners and you're playing 11. But the bigger picture, Smithy, and you are right, you know, we haven't quite, you know, arrived at what the right recipe is. And probably sitting over the top of that is the fact that we've had such fantastic success from the Southies, the Bolts, now Jamieson, Wagner, you know, who have just led our attack and won games of cricket, you know, via their quick bowling. And so where does the spinner sort of, you know, then fit into that? And it's a bit of a conundrum. I'm not giving you any straightforward answer here. I know that. But one of the answers is, you know, the way that we have used the spin all-rounder in the past, you know, the Mitchell Santners, we tried Rachin Ravindra, who's got a fantastic future, and now Michael Bracewell's having a crack. And I do believe that, you know, part of the answer lies in that space.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough, Gav. Well, thanks for answering all those questions. We can assume then, as the public, that Williamson, Bolt, Southie and Conway are all fit. Well, if fit and available, will be very much in the reckoning for the T20 World Cup, yeah?
Well, we've got the tour before that, Smithy, into the West Indies.
Yeah.
Certainly, Gary and I love to be thinking that we've got a 100% full complement of players to pick from, and those guys would be, you know, throwing their hands high in the air for selection.
Okay, I think that's around mid-July you're going to name that as well. So that's 2 or 3 weeks away. Gav, thanks very much for your time this morning. I knew you'd turn up on time as well. You always did. Thanks for your help. Thanks for your help, mate, and all the best with this test match this weekend. I know it's a dead rubber, but a test win is a test win. And Headingley's been pretty kind to us, so I hope it goes well. Thank you.
Thanks, Smithy. Appreciate your support, mate.